Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wandering in the night. What were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through? Something in your eyes was...
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Third Degree Burn. I'm your host, Kirk Greenfield, and we are going... This is the penultimate issue. This is the penultimate episode, I should say, as we hit the final story arc that has everyone's pulse pounding. And by everyone, I mean our team of experts who have been gathered here, fans of John Byrne. We're going to introduce folks alphabetically here. We're going to start out with Tim Elliott.
Hello.
And Nigel Sinks from Japan.
Hello.
And Frederick West. Frederick or Fred, which do you prefer?
I prefer Fred because it makes the UK people freak out when they hear Fred West on the line. Hi, everybody. How you doing? I'm not that Fred West.
Okay. I'm really excited to start this four-issue arc because as they were coming off the shelf or off the spinner rack, so to speak, when they were originally published many years ago, we had no idea where this was going. Other than a couple of teasers that Byrne sprinkled in earlier in the last couple issues, this I just had no idea. So as he would, forgive the expression, spoon feed it to the fans in small doses, I was right there. He had me by the nose, and I don't want to spoil things, but I was going along the garden path. And then I'll save my comments for a little bit later on. Before we get too far into this, does anyone have any comic news or Burn news to share? I have one.
I have none. That's just Brian's department.
A lot of the brick and mortar stores are announcing or reminding people that they are taking orders for X-Men Elsewhen, the first of three volumes. And I don't know what deadlines there are, but if you're looking to see where Byrne would have taken the X-Men after the point where he left, about issue 144, this is your opportunity to pick up the trade paperbacks that have been inked and colored. So I don't know the exact timing of this, but folks, if you're into it, talk to your local retailer, because they are available or they are becoming available very shortly here.
And if you're in the Minnesota area, be sure to get them from, Badger Comics or Comic Badger?
Comic Ferret.
Ferret.
Yeah, Comic Ferret.
My apologies, David. Be sure to stop by Dave's store and pick them up from him.
Well, it's very easy to make that mistake, considering that the Badger is what the state team in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, in the Madison sports team.
Yeah, they're the Badgers, I believe.
And I think they made a superhero based upon that, the Badger, many years ago, not Byrne related, but someday over a cold one, I'll tell you the story of that. But it's from another time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have issues 25 and 26 on tap for tonight. And then the next episode will be 27, 28, and maybe a special view into Secret Wars number 4. That's what's on deck for tonight. Who has 25 prepared and ready to present?
That would be me. I have our first issue that we're going to be covering. And Nigel, I believe, has our follow-up, issue 26.
All right. Well, Tim, if you're ready.
I am. I will. Let's get into issue 25 here. And this one, when I was writing the synopsis, it's broken into two chapters. So that's kind of how I did the... He has two chapter titles. So I did my synopsis. It's a little... I took the one offline and kind of added to it because it was lacking. But
You're not kidding. You're not kidding.
Alpha Flight issue 25. Our writer is John Byrne with, he's got a special credit here from Bill Mantlow as creative kibitzing. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if he was just helping out as you know, not a spoiler, but as we know, Mantlow was going to take over Alpha Flight when Byrne left. So maybe they were starting to compare notes or collaborate in some way. Our writer is, of course, John Byrne, and our inker is Bob Wycheck. Our colorist is Andy Yankus. Lettering is Rick Parker. Our editor is Denny O'Neill, and it's listed as Don Daly. And, of course, editor-in-chief is still, at this point, Jim Shooter. We have a cover date of August 1985 with an on-sale date of April 30th, 1985. 32 pages, and this is still only 65 cents. Byrne was busy this month because not only did he put out this issue, he also did the cover art for Amazing Heroes number 76, cover art for Captain America's 308. He did one more chapter in Epic Illustrated number 31 of The Last Galactus Story. He was writer-artist on FF 281. Cover artist of Iron Man 197. He did the artwork for Judge Dredd Crime Files number 1, and that is the one you covered. Am I not mistaken? That Nigel.
That's right.
Okay, so yep. That, if you want to listen to Nigel's wonderful coverage of that, I'll put a link to the episode in which he did that on as a solo story.
He also did 138.
138. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
He had Rawhide Kid number 1, he did cover art, and Web of Spider-Man number 5, he did cover art. So he was a busy man. Okay, this is, like I said, broken into two chapters. The first chapter is entitled, "In Graves Give Up Their Dead." North Star stands accused in front of the rest of Alpha Flight for the crimes of his past. In typical North Star fashion, he isn't being cooperative in answering the questions of his teammates. In fact, he's downright combative about it. The hearing is cut short, however, when Puck enters the room. He claims there's a battle going on downtown between the villain Caliber and someone who appears to be Guardian. Talisman is already on the scene and can confirm that the person fighting Caliber is indeed wearing the uniform of Guardian, Heather's dead husband, allegedly. Talisman joins the fight and uses her powers to dissolve Caliber's power suit. As Guardian congratulates Talisman on her more professional performance, she asks him, "Well, why aren't you dead?" He starts to explain when Heather, Northstar, Aurora, Shaman, and Box arrive. Guardian assures them that he is, in fact, Guardian and Heather's lost husband, Mac. He kisses her to prove it, and she faints away. Chapter 2, Up from the Lazarus Box. When Heather awakens, Guardian has taken his mask off and does seem to be Mac. He goes into explain that when she thought he had died, he had actually used his suit to rupture the space-time continuum. He was teleported to Ganymede, one of Jupiter's moons. He passed out due to the cold and lack of oxygen, but when he awakened, he found that he had been saved by an advanced race of fish-like creatures called the Quillen. That's how I'm gonna pounce it. He spends several months recuperating with the creatures, for he tells them he wants to go home. They use their trans-optic scanner to show him Earth, but it's Earth 10,000 years in the past. One of the chief scientists puts Mac in suspended animation while they all try to come up with a way to send him home. When Mac awakens, the Quillen have been involved in a world war and have bombed themselves back into the Stone Age. He spots a ship they had built for him, climbs aboard, and blasts off. He sleeps again for his 28-month journey to Earth. He lands off the coast of British Columbia, and the ship immediately dissolves. Mac swims ashore, finds some old clothing in an old cabin, and he makes his way to Vancouver, where he is spotted by Heather, see previous issues. At that point, he did not want to approach her. He was afraid to reveal his true condition to her. He rips away his outfit and explains that Quillen could not tell the difference between him and his power suit. They put him back together, but they had no idea what a human was like. So they made him into more man, a mix of man and machine. He is now a cyborg.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
I don't know about you, but I have two more pages in front of me.
That I forgot to add that to my synopsis. It's just two pages of Box, basically. As we know, Walter has inhabited the Box robot because his physical body had withered away and crumbled. So he's now living in Box's robot, and he's just smashing some robots and having fun. And he's told by Box, you know, be careful. We haven't tested this robot. You could damage it. And then Walter and Aurora have kind of a conversation about, well, if I'm going to live in this body, you know, how's that going to work between the two of them? And she kind of thinks about it for a minute, and then she flies off, and basically hinting that, well, they're not going to have any kind of a physical relationship, because obviously he's a giant robot and she's human. So that's when Box tells them, well, I think I found a way to give you another human-like body. And that's where it ends. So,
right.
Yes, that was the part I left out.
Yep.
I thought maybe you were trying to say the end of the series. That you were doing a big surprise.
I wrote my synopsis late before he got in the call. Yep. So I just missed it, you know, so.
Well, I have to start the comments on the cover. Does anybody recognize the layout of this cover?
From issue 11.
Alpha Flight 11.
Yeah. It's virtually identical. It is a red cover with a silhouette of Guardian standing in front of, well, I have to think back to what was the 11? Who was he standing in front of? Was it
Omega Flight, wasn't it?
Yeah, okay.
Omega Flight.
Mm. Omega, that's it.
Mm. So it's virtually the same positioning. So Bern is playing on your memory and teasing you at this point, although we don't realize it quite yet.
Yeah, but the silhouetted person is reversed.
Yeah. Say again?
The silhouetted person is reversed.
Okay.
On number 11, we see Guardian's costume, and it's the characters in the background that are silhouettes.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is now reversed. And Guardian's the silhouette, and Alpha Flight, we can see who they are.
Very good.
It's also interesting, if you look at the masthead for the title, in number 11, Guardian blocks part of it out, but in 25, you see through the Alpha Flight masthead and see the silhouette of that person through the text of Alpha Flight.
Yep. Which is reversed out. 11.
Good catch,
Has the logo, the title Alpha Flight, changed its font?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't have 11 right in front of me. I just wanted to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, so, it's definitely changed. Sorry. It's kind of, it's more bubble-like. There's an angle to the one on 11 that is not there for 25. Cover-wise. For the bubble. Sorry.
I got to tell you how excited I was when this came out, because I didn't know where he was leading. This hooked me immediately. Of course, I was already buying it monthly. There was no way I was not going to buy this. But turning I'm looking at the trade paperback, the collection here. As I turn the page, the splash page also is in red. And when you say that North Star is on the spot, that's literally, you know, he stands accused. He is in the spotlight, you know, in front of a red background. So, you know, it really hits you. I think the coloring of both the cover and the first page is supposed to push your buttons, and I think it does at a subconscious level.
Well, he said he's been, you know, Byrne does this a lot. He puts in little like a bread trail of stuff, little hints and stuff, like Heather spotting him that she swears is Mac, you know, when she sees him when she's out with Talisman. And so we're to think, you know, what is, and it's not like in comics, people don't come back, you know, people return all the time.
Sorry, Tim.
No, go ahead.
In this title, that was the whole kind of gimmick, that when Mac died, he wasn't ever going to come back. You know, that was part of the whole shtick, basically, when this came out in the 80s, that, you know, oh my God, they've killed off the lead, and they're adamant that they're never going to bring him back. I remember that distinctly in the conversations in the 80s around this title.
Yeah, they were going to kind of Ben Parker him. He was not going to come back.
Yeah.
But, and that's why I wonder if, not to kind of jump ahead, but when he comes back and he goes into this, it's a really long story. It's several pages of his, of how he came back. He teleported himself to Ganymede, and then how the aliens resurrected him. And I wonder if he puts, Byrne put so much effort into that so people wouldn't think, oh, this is a trick. And he went to so much trouble to get this elaborate backstory that, no, he's got to be back, you know. And then to to add to that, he's a cyborg. So you're like, okay, well, now what's it going to be like? You know, he's part man, part machine, which I assume when he comes back and you see him fighting Calibur, obviously he didn't have time to build or the resources to build another suit. So I assume now his powers are built in. You know, his suit's part of him, so he has all this power. He doesn't have to have the suit to do what he does. It's all kind of built into him now, so. Which would have been, you know, made him a little more of a powerful, you know, because up until then, without the suit, he's just, he's like Iron Man. He's just a guy, you know. So, it's interesting to,
Well, I got excited when I saw this cover, of course, because it took me a long time to get over the fact that he was dead and he wasn't coming back. So then when I saw this and I was like, oh yeah, cool, he might be coming back. And
look who knows so much, huh? Well, it just so happens that your friend here is only mostly dead.
I mean, like you just said, it's quite an elaborate story that he gives about how he, what happened to him. In fact, it's too, even by comic standards,
it's too much. Yeah,
it's a bit too fantastical. Yeah, but I still, well, I wanted to believe. So
yes,
there was no way I was looking for something like, oh, you know, what's the catch? Because it can't be him. I was just like, yes, he's back. He's back. And the fact that, as you said, they turned him into something a little bit different. He was now like a cyborg. And I thought, yeah, I can live with that. Yeah, he's back. Great. And so, yeah, I just wanted this to be true. So at this stage, I believed. Yeah.
I think we all did.
I couldn't see it. That was the intent. Yeah, but I mean, when you look, as I said, when you look at that story...
What happened?
It's like, oh, come on. This is ridiculous. Yeah. It's too far-fetched.
It called to mind an echo of an old story from Fantastic Four 10, where Dr. Doom returns and swaps bodies with Reed Richards. But the point is, Doom has a story of being rescued by the ovoids, who taught him how to change bodies, swap bodies. And it's far out. It's science fiction. It's like an incredibly involved way to bring him back from the dead, which in the early issues of the Fantastic Four under Stan and Jack, they had to do virtually every time they brought a villain back. So this tale that Guardian is telling rings bells. It feels similar. And I think Byrne had that in mind. They're not the same characters. They're not the ovoids and whatever these people are called, the Uinns or whatever their name is. They are not the same race, but it's the same sort of rescue. It's the same sort of help and assistance in returning. So Again, I bought it.
And Byrne used that same mind swap later in his run when Doom is killed by not Tyrax, what was it called?
Terrax.
When he's supposed to, you know, vaporized, and you think, well, Doom's dead. And then you realize, no, he did the old mind swap thing.
Yeah.
So.
And then he uses it later still in Sensational She-Hulk.
Yeah. Hey, if you can do it, why not, right? You know?
So well, they hadn't used it for a long time, but when he did that, when Byrne used that to, so to speak, pull a fast one and swap out Doom, I was oblivious. I did not catch, when I read that Fantastic Four issue, what had happened. I just thought that was a subplot, a characterization for Aunt May, and I missed it. I missed it completely until I went back and reread it, you know, after a couple of issues later, and went, oh!
Yeah, when you reread it, it's pretty obvious that something like that has happened, the way he talks to Aunt May.
I'm going to say, don't look at expressions on faces. You can tell when the guy suddenly changes. Yeah.
Oh, too subtle for me. But back to Alpha Flight. What do you think of Northstar standing trial, so to speak, for his earlier actions? Is this justified or is this a kangaroo court?
Well, I don't know if he's on. He says, is it really a trial? And this really, like Heather says, not really. It's more of a hearing. But I think they do have kind of a right to say, hey, you know what, you know, is any of this true? Explain yourself, tell your side of the story. And I want to ask, because this is kind of immediately forgotten about when Puck comes in. I don't remember reading past this. Is this ever brought up again in Alpha Flight?
No.
It's kind of forgotten, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole separatist movement, the whole Quebecois separatist movement is really kind of discard it basically as a plot line for anything. I think it only comes up in this very short window, so it's not something to like hang your hat on.
Well, we said it before, I think when Byrne leaves the book, to my remembering how I read it about another 20 issues, I guess 25, it loses some of its Canadianness when Mantlo comes on and other writers. It just becomes a basic superhero book. It loses that thing that Byrne made it kind of Canadian centric that I liked. Yes. And that gets lost and it just become another kind of box standard superhero team.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I thought it was a bit over the top, this like inquisition, if you like, into North Star's past. But yeah, it doesn't last very long. And like you say, Heather's saying this is not a trial. And then, of course, yeah, as soon as Puck comes in with the news that's going on downtown, that's it. So.
Well, I wonder. No, go ahead.
It's just an interesting way to get into the story, I think.
I wondered if Byrne had intended this as a continuing plot line, plot thread. And with the developments of him, his leaving the title, that it was just left dangling, that he didn't pursue it, and nobody else did as well.
Yeah.
But that if had he continued, which he didn't want to, from what I hear, all evidence, as far as I know, he didn't like the series. He didn't like the characters. He did his best work, I think, but I don't know how to interpret this, that he makes such a great leaping off point for characterization and then just leaves it fallow. There must have been something left on the cutting room floor in the adjustments.
Well, it is possible, a way to just keep tension amongst the group. It keeps Northstar kind of being belligerent with the rest of the team. It kind of keeps it more standoffish, keeps the tension between him and his sister. I mean, it's just a way to kind of dig up drama for the book. And it might, you know, be something that just the rest of the team don't trust him if it's continued, and he would slowly maybe get their win over their loyalty and their trust. But you know, as you said, it's kind of dropped immediately, and you know, again, I once Byrne left this book, I really have very vague memories of what went on. I can't really remember what happened after he's gone.
I mean, I'll be honest, North Star is not around for very long after Byrne leaves. He and Aurora kind of leave the title, and the new people bring new characters in, and they refocus the team kind of thing. And North Star is kind of forgotten until he joins the X-Men, and they, you know, he gets his big wedding episode and or issue, you know, kind of thing. But those were different years. Those weren't set in Canada. That was set with the X-Men, you know, kind of thing. The new team that North Star joins after Alpha Flight.
Yeah, I know. So Madison Jeffries comes on and kind of has a pivotal role.
Yes.
Later on.
Yes.
With the box robot. And then, of course, Heather gets her. And I don't remember when she finally gets her suit and becomes.
It's after Byrne.
Yeah, it's after. She's not. She's not Guardian. What is she? She Vindicator.
Something like that.
Yes, she is
Vindicator. Yeah.
Is that round about the late 30s?
No, it's not far from where we're at now in the story. But I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah. I think we can confine our discussions to the issue at hand.
Right, exactly.
So
I like how Heather wears primarily red and white in this, as if she is Guardian already.
Right, she's wearing a costume already.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah. Mm. Maybe that's foreshadowing. So go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the splash where North Star's in the spotlight, I think, is an interesting way of, obviously, that's his, you know, his artistic interpretation of him being in the spotlight and kind of being on. He's not literally in a spotlight, but it looks more like something you would find on like a stage play or something, where they would spotlight someone to kind of emphasize their importance, which I think is kind of interesting the way he's done it. Because obviously he's just in a room with the rest of them while they're kind of grilling him.
Yeah. Now, as I recall, Aurora took off from her brother and very upset. And I'm going to tell on you. I think that was at the end of the Pink Pearl episode. Mm-hmm. But then nothing happens for the entire Night of the Beast two-part arc. Mm-hmm. But it comes back. So speaking of earlier threads, Caliber now shows up, got his armor back, and is in the process of a battle royal with the police. But nobody seems to know who set him free or how he got his armor. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we know, unless you don't want to spoil it, we know how he gets out. But it's not revealed in this issue. It's revealed. Not even the second one. I think it's revealed in 27.
Okay, I did not recall that was covered, but
it's revealed how he's because the police say that they had his armor. Why they didn't destroy the armor, I don't know, but they had it in a separate cell, and then somehow he got it out, and then you know, and he mentions. But I think it's interesting, he mentions Guardian, that he had originally designed the armor to fight Guardian. And he was that's why he was excited that Guardian shows up. And then, of course, Talisman, you know, again, her kind of vague, undefined powers just is able to, I don't know, make a bubble or something and kind of dissolve his... just dissolves his Iron Man suit, and he's sitting there in his boxers and shorts and socks. So,
yeah, a magical dissolving bubble.
He looks like sort of a young Tony Stark wannabe.
He does, yeah, he does look like.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting that she, well, sorry, earlier when Talisman was talking to the cops, she mentions kind of that, I guess, nope, the public doesn't know that Guardian's dead. So she kind of mentioned something. They're like, what? She's like, oh, never mind. You know, I don't want to, you know, never mind. I'm going to take care of him. And then we get a little replay of him blowing up and Heather looking at his ashes.
Just as she says that, she thinks back into a video flashback, if you will, of Heather witnessing Mac's demise, his end. Does anybody find it awkward that there are no soft bubbles around those panels showing that it is a flashback? I mean, the white gutters are very clean and straight. The only clue that we have that it's a flashback is Talaman's continuing thought bubbles narrating what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. I just found that a little disconcerting.
It's not.
I would have preferred, you know, a soft edge on the white gutters of the panels to be more clear that that was a flashback. But it works. I mean, I got it. You understand. I just thought it was a little funny artistic choice.
Well, how many times have we seen this replayed already since his actual death in issue 12? At least two or three times they've recapped this of him blowing up like this. So I guess they're thinking, well, if you've been reading the book, you know he's dead, and she's talking about it. But I see your point, Kirk, that usually they put some kind of a indicator around the border or something to let you know that it's a flashback or a memory or something.
And there is, to their credit, there is an editor's note at the bottom of the second panel saying in the now classic Alpha Flight number 12. Yeah. You know, so you know, it was just, I just found a little odd bounce. That's all.
Yeah. While we're on that page, and this is probably just a problem that occurred with the original printing, because I don't know what you're looking at, whether it's reprints or scans or whatever. But in the first panel where Talisman is, in the colouring, her legs have kind of like got like a dappling.
Yeah.
She's kind of like mainly fleshy pink coloured legs.
It's almost like splodges, doesn't it?
There's like dappling and splodges, of a darker pink all over her legs. Have you got that on your copies?
It's not in the trade.
Yeah, they've right. fixed it. Yeah,
I mean,
it's a
coloring problem. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But she looks like she's got some kind of bad rash on her legs.
Yes,
eczema.
Well, until you said the dappling or the spottiness, I was looking in the trade. It's ever so slight, but her legs are slightly more in shadow. But they're definitely pink, flesh-colored.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
you would see this. But
it's probably a problem with the way they color both her and Shaman. They're kind of trying to come up with that American Indian skin tone, and I guess you know, they're not being overly successful with it because she does look kind of red in the other.
Yeah, and in fact, in other parts of her body, now I look, it looks like she's got measles or something.
I just think it's funny that Alpha Flight's sitting around grilling North Star, and they're like, oh, Talisman, you don't know your power set very well. You're kind of an apprentice to the team. Why don't you go off and see what the police are dealing with downtown? And this was before cell phones were a thing. It's like, did they give her any way to contact the team if she runs into trouble? Or is she supposed to run and find a payphone and have a porter on her or a loony on her to run through?
Send the new guy.
Poor Elizabeth.
Well, she doesn't even know how herself to go, because she says her powers really work on harnessing if there's magic already there. But I guess her dad tells him, well, there's kind of ambient magic around all the time anyway. Just use that. She's just kind of making it up as she goes.
Pretty much.
I don't know. Ambient magic that she draws on the magic that's already there? Mm-hmm. Has that been established?
My father says there are mystic energies abroad everywhere. Mm. It's almost like picking up radiant cosmic energy or something. Or I think that's the way. I think in Harry Potter, that's the way they explain magic in that world. That there's just kind of it's almost like the Force is just something you can tap into.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Force. Star Wars.
Yeah, it was kind of established that her abilities really only worked on the mystical, that it didn't have any physical, practical application. It was more of a metaphysical ability that she had. So I was kind of surprised that she had any effect on somebody that's pure mechanics, like Caliber is.
Right. She's fighting somebody who's not magical, then she would have no way I think that's just a way around it. Like, oh no, there's just kind of, there's like magic in the air you can use.
I feel magic everywhere.
You know, and later it's hinted that, and I think in the later issues that, and I think Shaman has even hinted in the issues we've already covered that her power, she hasn't reached her potential yet. She is really much more powerful than she thinks she is, or he knows she is, you know, that she can really be, you know. So, you know, we're going to see what that becomes, but
maybe.
Yeah. That really Caliber's in there just to kind of bring Guardian there so that we can have the meetup with the team and Mac, you know, then he gets lays a big smooch on Heather and apparently makes her pass out. So,
well,
a heck of
in that, you know, looking for seams in storylines or cliffhangers, that splash, that kiss at the end of this chapter would have made a perfect and cliffhanger ending to a floppy issue. Mm-hmm. And then the next, you know, the next page up from Lazarus box, that, you know, that's a perfect pickup in the next issue. So I think some surgery has been done to this tale, but I don't mind how it plays out here at all.
I also think that the kiss there, it's kind of a weakness in the plot, because for somebody who's been together with somebody else for such a long time, like they have,
I agree.
The kiss, she would have known that it wasn't Mac.
Yes, I agree. So I wonder if something else, well, this is hindsight, because I know what's coming. My headcanon starts to wonder if he did something else.
Because that's, you know, why she passed out. Maybe he sort of transferred some sort of gas into her mouth or something and knocked her out.
We can come up with anything to justify it, but that's, I wondered too.
Well, she could have been, I mean, she's already stressed out. She thinks she's seen him. She's been grieving for, it's been 8 months or however long it's been, almost a year. And maybe she wants this so bad that she's willing to overlook all of that. That's probably why she passes out too, because she's kind of overwhelmed by, oh, my husband's back. Yeah.
That's
how
I read it. That's how I read it.
Yeah.
She was overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how you're supposed to pick it up.
Yeah. Because at this point, and then of course, now then we get him a picture of him blowing up.
on the next
we
go through it all again.
What did you think when you read this and you got this explanation that all he was able to cross circuit is his suit and rip open a hole in space-time?
I bypassed the compressor.
What did you think of the explanation? Did you buy this, or did that ring false to you? My experience is it initially rang false because I was there. I read issue 12. He did no such thing. But I bought it. I swallowed it and said, okay, I'll suspend my disbelief. tell me how you escaped. And I thought, boy, what a wild tale. This is just like Dr. Doom getting rescued. And, you know, I went for the ride.
It feels like typical comic book retconning, but it's very serial-like, yes. You know, and the serials of like the 40s and 50s were, oh no, the truck's going to go over the cliff. Our hero is going to die. Oh no, went over the cliff. Next serial. Oh no, he jumped out. We just didn't show you that part. So that's what this feels like. Right. This is Guardian like, oh, well, of course, I don't know why he thinks. It doesn't say that he did anything special about his suit, just that the force of the blast would rip open the space-time continuum. I mean, it's a gamble, but like he says, I was going to be dead either way. And he even talks about it carbonizing the air, so that explains the ashes that they found, you know, so that he winds up on Ganymede. Mm.
I wonder how long it took John Byrne to come up with this idea.
I think he had it from day one.
You think so?
Do you think so? Do you think this was in the outline?
I personally think that he had envisioned when he signed a 2-year contract to do. I mean, I'm surmising some stuff, but it's my opinion that when he signed a 2-year contract, that he plotted out the broad arc, the broad story arc. That it'll be the team that doesn't function as a team, and then we'll smack them in the face with issue 12, and then they'll recover and they'll build together, and then we'll smack them in the face again. I think he had this in broad strokes all planned out with his editor of where this was going to go. But when he got to 24, he found he had a couple of more stories to tell before he could tie it up. And that's the point where I feel the negotiation was with the next creative team that Nigel spotted, saying the Peacemaker being editor in chief, and you know the credits giving a tip of the hat to Manlow, and I firmly believe that he knew where he was going from day one.
Okay,
that's possible,
but I invite you to disagree with me. I don't mean to dominate this.
Have you guys seen, I see it on Facebook, there's a guy that cosplays as this damaged battle suit. Mm. He built this suit, and he goes to conventions, and he's got, you know, he's got his face, looks like it's all been beat up. It's a well done outfit. Yeah, it's torn, and it's got all the circuitry, just like in the image we've got here. It's pretty cool. But then we start the long... we go into the long, like 6-page story of him wanting to get Bond, which I think he would die instantly because I don't think Ganymede has any kind of atmosphere.
I was just thinking that bit's not a really good, not a very good convincing start. No. You know, you start on the moon of Jupiter, but that's it. It's all over.
Yeah. And you have enough time to look around to figure out where you are before you pass out from oxygen deprivation and the vacuum of space.
Well, I guess a no prize could be that the suit is still protecting him slightly. you know, but then he's, you know, then he's rescued by typical Byrne aliens, these little whatever they are. They look like squid-like.
Quillern.
Yeah. The Quillern, yeah, however we decided to pronounce that. And again, his little battle suit, which is interesting because it looks, that's typical Byrne. I thought when they use their trans optic scanners to look at Earth, and he sees that it's, what does he say?
Egypt.
It would have been so cool if what he saw was Rama Tut. Mm. Instead of just Egyptians.
Oh,
I thought that would have been really nice.
Yeah. Missed opportunity there, but I think you're right.
They've done that.
Anybody think the escape pod that he launches in looks vaguely familiar?
Like... Yeah.
I'm suggesting that it looks an awful lot like the redesign of Superman escape from
Krypton. Yeah, the birthing. Yeah, it looks a lot like the birthing pod that when he does Man of Steel.
Yeah,
it looks. Byrne borrows from himself a lot. That's not a problem.
True.
I'm sorry we didn't get any scenes with the Querulans in the state that he, when he woke up and he found them in this, like, they bombed themselves back to this medieval state. I'm sorry we didn't get to see any of them, because I think that would have been cool to see, you know, from their high tech to their low tech kind of evolving would have been cool.
Well, I think it's awfully convenient that they're no longer around. I skimmed right over that when I originally read this and didn't realize that's, I didn't remember that that was a story element. Well, I just thought they returned him.
Talking about convenience, it's convenient that the ship survived. If these people had some type of a civil war or world war, you know, the fact that his ship survived, and I guess it's just automatic, you know, he gets in it and knows how to, or he knows how to fly it. I don't know. And then he, you know, takes another 28 months to get back to Earth.
Maybe he was trained in suspended animation like Sylvester Stallone in the Wrecking, what was that?
Oh, Demolition Man. Right. Yeah. He was there. Yeah, he was taught. Yeah.
He just didn't know how to use the shells,
the seashells. So, yeah. And then we get the flashback. And again, it's not, they're not doing anything to show these are flashbacks, Kirk. You know, they're not doing anything special to the frames. When you see him, he breaks into a cabin and gets clothing. Then when you see the scene from his perspective when Heather sees him, and then he decides to just, you know, it's like, and I'm like, just take the suit off. You don't have to rip it. You know, he just has like a Superman tear of his shirt and just takes it all off. And he's all, he has little bits and pieces of him all over that are just very similar to the way they did the cyborg Superman in Death of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Except not as not as kind of half and half.
Yeah, he, you know, looking at it now, you know, he tore that suit to shreds, and it's like, doesn't he have to wear it again?
I know.
Buddy,
now you have to make another one.
Is Heather supposed to sew those straps back together and make you another Guardian outfit? What?
Yep. Well, it has been established that she has one or two in a closet that she held up in front of a mirror, right?
Yeah, true.
But that does seem a little extreme that he would do the chest rip.
If the one she's holding up, you know, there is that scene where she's holding up, but then that must be just a covering that covers, that can't be, the battle suit can't have, I thought the circuitry and all that stuff was in the suit itself and you put it on, but maybe you put on the circuitry suit or whatever, then you put your covering on over that. Then,
it's like one of those car wraps.
Exactly,
You know, you have today, you know, the battle suit's there, and then you have a wrap that you put on it that gives it the nice superhero look. Yep.
And we know Burns a huge Star Trek fan. So this is very much like Captain Pike and the, was it Weena? I can't remember her name, from the first Star Trek pilot, where she says, you know, they put her back together, but then they'd never seen a human, so she doesn't look
right.
You found me in the wreckage, dying, lump of flesh. They rebuilt me. Everything works. They had never seen a human. They had no guide putting me back together.
Yep. Right. That's exactly right. Yep.
The Talosians.
Talosians, exactly.
And there's at least also in the first season of the original Star Trek, Nurse Chapel's love, Dr.
Kirby?
Something or other.
Where, Kirby?
What?
Corby.
He says, Corby. Yes, that's right. Where he says, but it's me. I'm in here. You know, don't you still love me?
And then we get our two little, our little end. Which
two pages,
which is interesting the way when Box says, yes, if this is going to be my home sweet home, now my real body's been destroyed. Well, a fella should be able to have some fun. He's talking about he just let loose and busting up rocks. And Aurora says, well, what kind of fun, Chair Walter, you know, corked up in a machine like that. And he's like, hey, what are you talking about? You still love me from my mind, right? And she's like, oh, I don't know. And then she flies off. And then she has to think about, like, well, you know, if we can't be physical, you know, and that's what Box says. She is a very, very physical lady. She needs a man with a real human form. And I think I know how you can get one. So
what do you think Roger meant when he said that?
I think he means that Shade wants to be able to be intimate with Walter, and she can't now that he's in a robot. That's the way I read it.
Right, but the last word balloon where he says, I think I know how we can get you one.
Oh, well, that's what, well, we find out in the next, we don't find the next issue, the issue after that. That he is, he's got an idea about how. And I wonder,
he's got an idea.
Yeah, I wonder if this is where, not to give anything away, but this is where Matlow, maybe where he comes in. They were cooking up the way of solving one problem and another problem in two different books. And kind of combine
switch over.
That's probably why he's got the credit. In the
that might have been his idea about how to do one thing or the other.
Probably why these two pages are just kind of tagged on to the end.
Could be. Yeah, this may be his idea for.
Might have been a last minute addition to that. That issue.
I will say that when
just to wet out.
In later issues, you said this is after Burn, but in later issues when they redesign the box robot, I really don't like the look. He loses this kind of bearded, kind of facial look. And he looks more like just a robot. It doesn't. It's when Jeffries kind of takes over. And he becomes more of a transformer. I don't like it nearly as much as this. Well, and
this one had more style to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. The Buick look.
Yeah. Well, anything else to say, or we want to move on? That Nigel cover his issue.
I'm just going to say, Kirk, you didn't mention anything about the cover box and the number of heads.
You want to share today? That?
Well, yeah, the seven heads there again of, everybody who we see in the issue.
Well, it's missing one.
It's kind of crowded.
It's missing one.
Yeah, it's missing one.
Yeah.
But I was just going to say, everybody who appears in the issue, that one that's missing did not appear in the issue.
Exactly. Everybody so, that's in the, well, it's interesting that everybody that's on the cover that we actually see, aside from Box, because just the Box robot's there. The Box, the human, is not.
Box. Yeah, he's right there. Yeah,
good point. I wonder if that's supposed to be a clue. And then as we turn to 26, it gets even more crowded. Again, there's somebody missing. But I'll let Nigel take over. It's his story to tell.
Okay. So shall we move on to Alpha Flight? Yeah, Alpha Flight 26. As we move on. So, Alpha Flight 26, cover dated September of 1985, with a release date of June the 4th, 1985. 32 pages, 22 pages of story for 65 cents. Or 30 pence in the UK, or 75 cents in Canada. The usual team on the book, writer and pencils, John Byrne, inks, Bob Wiercheck, colours, Andy Yankus, letterer, Rick Parker, editors, Denny O'Neill and Don Daly, and of course, editor-in-chief, still Jim Shooter. Other works by Byrne with the September 85 cover date. He was doing Fantastic Four, number 282, Inwards to Infinity. Of course, he was the writer and artist on that. And then he did a lot of cover work this month as well. We've got Marvel Age number 30. He did the cover on that one. Power Man and Iron Fist number 119 did the cover on that, which was basically a picture of the what I'll call the evil Danny Rand, who would later we would find out was one of the alien plant creatures. And he did Web of Spider-Man number 6, Gold Rush, and Amazing Spider-Man number 268, This Gold Is Mine. He did both covers, and of course they form like a bookend design.
Those are both Secret Wars tie-ins,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes, Secret Wars tie-ins, yeah. And yeah, on the Web of Spider-Man, Spider-Man swinging, I think, from right to left, and he's wearing his red and blue costume. And then on Amazing Spider-Man, he's going from left to right wearing the black costume. And then also there was Who's Who, the definitive version of the DC Universe, issue 7, Dr. Psycho to Fastback. So presumably he did some characters in that, the DC version of Ohotmu. So, yeah, that was the other stuff that Byrne did during September 85. Right, so Alpha Flight number 26. And this issue, the title is called If at First You Don't Succeed. And this is what happened. Recently returned Alpha Flight leader Guardian shouts out orders to the assembled team of Aurora, Box, Puck, Shaman, and Talisman as they face off with a team of antagonistic robots. Both forces seem confident of their own superiority as they engage in combat. And when the robot leader takes to the air, Aurora confronts him high above the ground. However, the robot's speed catches her out as tentacles from the robot's hand ensnare her, squeezing her tightly. Guardian flies to the rescue, severing the tentacles with an electromagnetic beam, but the feedback causes Aurora to plummet to the ground. Shaman creates a soft bubble-type landing area from his medicine pouch for Aurora, but she's still hurt, possibly with cracked ribs. As Guardian battles on, he begins to gain the upper hand against the head robot, who orders his fellow bots to converge with him, creating one giant adversary. Voltron, anybody? The extra power of the giant robot has the Alpha Flight members scattering, and Guardian calls in Shaman and Talisman, who create a monstrous image which does not seem to be harmed by the robot's attack. Whilst distracted, Box flies in behind the giant robot and knocks his legs from under him. Then he swings him by the leg and crashes him into the rocky ground. Suddenly, Captain Mansfield calls for the testing sequence to be stopped. This was all a combat exercise for the Canadian Air Force Special Forces, testing their new combining robot. Shaman and Box take off with Aurora, who needs urgent medical attention. Guardian takes Puck and Talisman onto their next mission, having received information from Heather and North Star that the West Edmonton Mall is under attack from terrorists. On arrival at the mall, the heroes learn from an official that the attackers are Omega Flight. Guardian has the team split up to search for their enemies. Puck runs into Diamond Lil. Talisman finds Flashback. And North Star, who had already arrived, encounters Wildchild. In each case, the Alphans are equal to the challenge until they are blindsided by force fields created by an unseen assailant. Elsewhere in the mall, Guardian locates Heather, and as they discuss the situation, Mac frightens Heather by speaking in the voice of Jerry Jackson, Omega Flight's now dead ex-leader. Guardian then tears off his face and reveals himself to be the robot Delphine Courtney. Following Jackson's demise, the robot continued to work with Amiga Flight in order to complete the objective: destroy Alpha Flight. To be continued, next issue, Betrayal.
What a cliffhanger.
Exactly. There's lots going on in this issue. And they really...
Okay, let's stop.
Sorry, yeah. Before you don't realize that it's Guardian that's kind of betrayed him, his little hand, you see like a leg here, you see a hand there. He's not really...
Yeah.
He's not doing a good job of trying to hide who it is, so he's not like it's a big shock.
No, because the reveal is in this issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't it have been great for it not to have been revealed in this issue and just to have all these clues sprinkled in front of you?
Yeah, we would have been wondering, who is it?
But look at the cover. You could.
Well, yeah.
You could read that as Omega Flight has beaten Puck and Heather and North, all those at his feet. And now they're going to attack Guardian. Yeah. So it wasn't really.
That's how I read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Flashback's doing the come on.
Yeah.
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 Like the mask. Yeah. But.
And, you know, of course, now that we know that Mac is the robot Delphine Courtney, now you have to go back to issue 25 and go, none of that story about the Querulans was accurate. That was all Delphine Courtney's obfuscation about how Mac returned, but none of that really ever happened.
Right.
You know, that was the robot's story, basically.
Yeah.
Feeding her what she wanted to hear.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And those. Yeah.
I have to say, I'm looking at the cover and I'm like, I don't know if what you guys see on the cover, but there's that body at the feet of Diamond Lil wearing purple and pink.
That's supposed to be Heather, I think.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be Heather, but those colors remind me of an old Psylocke.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, it looks like it does look like she's wearing the jacket, but they just miscolored it. Yeah,
but it should be red and white.
Purple
and pink. Yeah.
Well, in terms of the coloring, your eye is intentionally drawn to the hand and the thigh or the buttocks the right side. I agree. It would have been better if they had given her white pants, but that may have drawn your attention away from where you're supposed to be focused. I don't know.
I always tend to focus on Flashback and Diamond Lil anyway when I look at this cover. So
yeah,
it didn't work anyway. And yet we've got 8 heads in the corner box on this one, Kirk.
Yes. Who's missing?
Who's missing?
Well, there's somebody there that wasn't in the issue at all.
That's true. Yeah.
Snowbird wasn't in this issue
at all. No, but she's suddenly there. Yeah. But who's missing? I don't know, unless you mean Guardian, but.
Guardian for one, but also Marina, if you think she's still part of the team.
She went out of this ages ago.
Yeah.
Marina left, never to return. Well, not during
Burns. I have a thought about that, too, that I'll get to in just a second. Put a pin in it now. We'll come back to it.
I like the palm trees in the mall and Edmonton of all places. I mean, that mall background looks like a Southern California mall,
doesn't it?
I've never seen one. And then you got these giant palm trees in the middle of Edmonton in this giant mall. I'm like, okay.
Well, apparently it was at the time of this book, the mall was only about 4 years old. And apparently it was the largest mall.
It was a big thing.
Biggest
until
one,
2004, I think. I always thought Mall of America was the biggest, but maybe it took over for Edmonton. I don't know.
Interesting.
The robots in the beginning, they're very almost like a Raj 2000. Like, you said Voltron Nigel, yes. And I looked that up. Voltron premiered a year earlier, and so did Devastator, the Transformers that become combined. They also appeared a year earlier.
Constructicons, transform!
And Byrne would use the same trick 3 years later in Action Comics when he was writing Superman, when he teams up with a Metal Man. They combine to make a great big robot-like creature.
What did you think of the multicolored robots? Most of them are orange body with a blue top, but their leader is just the reverse.
The opposite.
I thought that was a little hokey, but you know, I caught that it was a Transformer. I didn't know the name Voltron or any of that background.
Yeah,
because at this point I'm in my mid 20s, as this is coming out in the 80s. So I was not watching kids television or, you know, cartoons or tracking any of that Transformer stuff.
Do you take it that the guy from the Air Force who's testing this out, do you take that he is controlling all five of the robots, or there are five people like him that are controlling each individual robot?
Well, yeah. Well, I must admit, at first, when I first read it, and probably afterwards, actually, when I second read it, for most of this, I felt like there were people inside the suits.
The suits still could be, but
it's only when they join together into the big robot that I thought, oh, maybe it is they are all just autonomated, and then there's nobody actually in it.
Yeah.
And because you never see, I think if there had been somebody in it, after they'd sort of defeated it and they called the test finished, I think they would have shown us maybe one or two of the pilots kind of getting out.
Limping away.
Yeah, but they don't. So they must have been just like robots controlled from a central point.
Yeah. And when you look at that robot in relation to the box robot, you realize that it's not as big as we might think it would be. Like, there's no way a person could be in any one of those components.
Right.
Either that or they're very small people.
Right.
Well, they look to the small ones look to be about the size of a human. The blue guy, the bigger guy, the central guy seems to be a little bigger, but you're right. The scale seems to, when they combine, when he's knocking them off their feet, they don't seem to be as big as what they think they would be once they all combined. I would think they'd be much taller.
Looking at page 12, and by the way, I don't know if you noticed, but this issue is numbered. It's pages. Mm-hmm. The prior issue had no number, which led me to think that either that was an oversight or somebody shuffled papers when the last issue was put together. But my point is page 12, where the Air Force commander is saying, okay, stop. And then his faceplate becomes transparent. Does anybody recognize who that is? Because it's not only on that page, but it's also the top of 13. It's Roger Stern. John Byrne's good buddy, Roger. Mustache, beard, dark coloring. That's him to a T at this time period.
Yeah, I missed that. But,
Okay.
Well, I think he's done that before. I think, and we've mentioned it, Kirk, that he has drawn people. And I think he's written Roy Thomas in there a couple of places. And
those are me all the time.
And the same with whoever this guy is at the Edmonton Mall. That's drawn. Yeah, it looked like it's an actual person. I don't know who.
Somebody. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm not that up on 80s Canadian politicians.
I don't know either. I mean, it almost looks like somebody was trying to draw a bad version of Ronald Reagan. I don't think it is, but that's what it kind of looks like.
No, it's not Reagan.
I know it's not Reagan.
I don't know who it is, but it ain't Reagan.
Well, I know it ain't Reagan, but I'm saying that's what it looks like somebody's trying to draw. I mean, we've seen it before. Byrne is drawn. You can tell when he's trying to draw a character look like somebody, not just a generic character.
Yes.
Brian might have researched that one for us.
Yeah, Brian probably knows because he's our fountain of information like that. So did you get in the comic store, get to see the Byrne issues in the background when Mac first, she's in some place called Fantasy or something, and then behind her you see action figures and you see Hulk.
You say they're not that easy, but yeah.
No, but you see the Pink Pearl
G.I. Joe
and the Pink Pearl Alpha Flight cover is there.
Yeah.
That poster of She-Hulk, that's a poster I think he did of her holding up a band, I think, and actual musicians. Which
it's like
listening.
A group, There's a group on top of that disc, And there's a Fantastic Four issue as well.
Which is odd because at this time, that means somebody had already done that Hulk. That's a Byrne Hulk cover. So they must have already drawn those ahead of time.
It's 317.
Right. Yeah. Mm.
Either he's working ahead or he's already got the design in mind. Yes.
Could be. Mm-mm. Could be. Yeah.
It's true.
And it's
that's 317 as well.
Is Heather,
it's not even one of the early ones.
Is Heather packing a gun in this right here? Is that a sidearm?
It looks like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like it.
I don't know if she always had that.
That on what
you're right.
It looks like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, she has no powers.
That's true. I'd be packing a gun.
Reminded her before.
I'd be packing a gun too.
She's got to have some. She's got to have some defense.
I think
her politicians wearing those green goggles
because they look cool.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
Disguise.
Well, remember, she is pretty blind without glasses, so I'm sure there are prescriptive lenses in there.
They'd have to be.
Okay. I love the shading on that same. What is this, page 20, where she's in front of the toy store, the comic shop, or what have you. Mm-hmm. The third panel, the shading
on
Guardian's
Guardian,
face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something that I don't key on very strongly. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make a reference. I'm going to leap to the future when they did Avengers Dissembled and the very first issue, which was Avengers 500, as I recall. They did a lot of that shading in the setup, and the Scarlet Witch is not shaded exactly like this, but she's in shadow in the very first couple of pages, and a lot of people seized on that and they saw it for what it was. I never pick up on these things. It just it goes right past me because I just think it's an artistic choice to be dramatic. Mm-hmm. I never get the subtext that they're trying to communicate, except for this one, obviously. It pays off immediately in the next two pages.
Yeah.
So
well, he points in shadow, but he's got this little kind of smirk on his face. And his eyes are much more kind of pointed. And that's when he says, yes, I've seen him. And then so she realizes, wait a minute, that's not your voice. Then and then he pulls off his syntho skin covering. Which has to be pretty good for him to kiss her and let's be honest, I don't know how much time has passed between the last issue and this issue. It seems like maybe a couple days, maybe a week. And I don't want to be crude, but I would think they might have snuggled a little bit because, he's back. So whatever she's wearing must be pretty convincing. Must have give up body heat, and it's like in the Bronze Age or even the Silver Age when Batman would put a disguise on and he'd pull it off and he's wearing his Batman cowl under the disguise. It's like that. It's like you can't pull that off. But is it Dark Fate? The last Terminator movie when Schwarzenegger is living with a woman, and they say, and she realized that you never eat or sleep and you weigh, you know, 500 pounds. He's like, oh, our relationship's not physical. So he's able to pass himself off as human.
I was so excited for this issue. I mean, with the dramatic reveal at the end, I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, holy crap, where is this going? I couldn't wait for issue after issue. I was like on a roller coaster ride. I was like going full tilt. I just loved it.
Well, Nigel, were you heartbroken now that they, you know, he brought him back and he yanked the rug out from under you?
He's not back. he's not back. I mean, that made me feel sad again. But at the same time, I was looking forward to what I thought was going to come next. I'll say I thought. I was looking forward to what I thought was going to come next because I thought, oh, good, we're going to have a team against team battle. Because I was never really satisfied with the first Alpha Flight, Omega Flight battle. It didn't really, it wasn't really that much of a wing-ding battle, was it? So I was hoping for, you know, more of a good slugfest coming up.
Yeah.
I'll not say any more for now, but...
Well, and I guess we are to assume that Duffy and Courtney, the robot, that her robotic form can obviously mimic Guardian's powers because that's what she's been doing. She's been flying and using the electroblasts or whatever. So either I don't think she had anything like that before. So I don't know if she's been upgraded or.
No, I think Jackson having the suit and being so obsessed with getting vengeance against Hudson, I'm not surprised that he had the weapons and the ability to mimic. I mean, this is obviously Jackson is gone.
Yes.
We accept that at this point. So it's all Courtney Delphine and I buy it. It's like, okay. You know, she can do this. She could do this. She has those abilities because her programming was to dishonor Mac, to torture Heather as much as Mac. I bought it all. It's like, yes.
She says that, allowing me to complete my program instructions, the destruction of Alpha Flight. I don't feel that she is doing all of this to get revenge for, Jackson's death. It's more feels like this. She's just been hardwired into her, and she can't help but complete her programming. Which I couldn't tell if she's sentient or if she's just obeying what her, you know, what was programmed into her, and she can't help it. So then she's just been biding her time and coming up with a clever way of trying to get back at Alpha Flight. So,
well, it's been almost a year since Mac's death, and then they disappeared after that, and she's been upgrading herself, and she's been shepherding the other Omega Flight members, I think, to a certain degree, and keeping Caliber everyone focused on task.
Is it true that she's shepherding Caliber too?
No, I think she
don't give it away if that's a story point in the next couple of
issues. I don't think she's shepherding.
We'll get to it eventually, but
well, it took her almost a year to write that story, you know. Maybe she's not very creative. It took her that long to come up with the alien story.
AI had not been developed yet.
That's right. There was her ChatGPT that she could just put in and have it come up with something for her. But yeah, this
God, I love that final splash page. I was so into it. It was like I didn't catch it at first when I was reading it that, his voice has changed. Heather had to point it out and say, wait a minute, say that again. You don't sound right. I mean, it just set the hook so good. So right.
And you know, they took out all of the more powerful Alpha Flight members before. And so at that point, Courtney is just tormenting
right,
for Heather, because she knows Heather has no powers, you know, kind of thing. She can't do anything. So let's twist the knife a little bit.
It could have been interesting that when Guardian's taking the mask off and he or she is taunting, saying, you know, when he said, "Well, Jackson's dead," he goes, "Well, like Guardian, you know, you accept one resurrection, why not another?" What if instead of this last splash where you see he's taking the mask off, you cut without taking the mask off, and for the end of this issue, Byrne can make us think, well, Jackson is alive. He's somehow come back.
Yeah.
And he's inhabited this whatever reason. It's him, not Guardian. And then of course then you have the reveal of no, it's not him, it's the robot.
Yeah, I'd say everything's on the table at this point.
Just going back to the when the Amiga flight take out Alpha flight. I was never really happy with the way they took out Talisman. I don't know what you thought. It's probably just the way they drew it, but
yeah. Page 18, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. Page 18. Yeah. I mean, yeah. She's squaring up to take on the flashbacks. And then, but the blast that comes in from the air from Guardian, yeah. But it appears to hit the floor.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought, and then next minute he's saying, pick her up and meet me at the rendezvous point. And I thought, well, it didn't actually hit her. It hit the floor. So I thought, you know, she could have perhaps, you know, she wouldn't have been taken out straight away there. Yeah. I don't know.
I think she's just stunned.
It's not convincing enough for me. If the beam, you know, if the actual blast had hit her somewhere, then I would have thought, oh yeah, okay, she's been knocked out.
That would have killed her. Well, would you have been happier if Flashback had just knocked her out with that club?
No. He missed.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think if Guardian he could have hit her with a low level electrical blast.
She was getting surrounded by Flashback's other selves. But she was about to do some sort of mystical energy, and then she got took out, but it wasn't convincing enough for me. Yeah, I mean the other two, Puck and North Star, fair enough, because they were holding their own, but they just never saw that coming. Yeah, and North Star didn't see the invisible electromagnetic barrier. So yeah, wham, that's it.
Well, the thing with Diamond Lil that Byrne addresses later in Next Men, and I can't remember the woman's name who has the diamond heart or the hard skin and that
hair.
Yeah, well, the hair and everything. You know, she because he was trying to do it a little more realistic in that book, where I think at one point she either punches somebody or she puts her hand right through somebody because she's so tough. It's like hitting, you know, something rock hard. It would go right through you because Puck would not, if she's as hard as she is, if she's invulnerable, whatever, I think it would probably take his head off if she kicks him that hard. But of course we're not going to do that in this book, but you know, that's the same. Again, like I said, he addresses that later in Next Men.
Yeah.
What is the book where she pulls a strand of hair out and then almost strangles somebody like it's a piano wire? Is that in Next Men or is
that's Next Men? Well, in Next Men, she somebody tries to grab her hair and it cuts their hand because her hair is like razor wire. And I think in that same book, right, she uses a strand of her hair to cut some prison bars.
Okay. I didn't think it was Diamond Lil, but now I'm remembering.
Well, Diamond Lil could have strangled somebody with it, but, you know, and if in next minute, it would have probably garroted somebody and taken their head off. But
right, right.
I remember that being an Alpha Flight. I know the scene you're talking about, Kirk, because I remember that as being one of the things that she could do, but I don't remember when that occurred.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We still have a couple more issues before the series comes to an end.
Yes.
Any further comments on this?
No, I think it's this is a good, yeah. I mean, a lot happens, but it's a lot of setup for the final two.
Yeah.
It was
episodes.
I thought, jeez. I have to say, you know, the previous episodes after Mac's death, where everyone goes off and does their own thing and grieves their own way, I feel like this is the first time the team is back together, you know, kind of thing, actually working and functioning pretty tight as a unit, more so than they've done in the last 10 episodes or 10 issues kind of thing. This is where they're starting to come back together.
Yeah, they are. They are, and they get operating as a true team.
Yeah. Yes, and they get torn apart again.
Yeah,
I mean, I understanding what the mission was, the assignment from the suits, and how much Byrne chafed under that. I see more and more convincingly, or I'm willing to buy into the explanation more and more that he was trying to thwart the suits. I'll give him a team book without a team. I'll kill the main character. I'll shatter the team and then put them together and then shatter the team again. I see an intent and a message underlying all of this. Maybe it's not there. I wish Brian was here so he could comment on it. Maybe he'll comment on it later. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, any further comments or shall we wrap this up?
I think we can wrap up. I think we're in the final stretch. We've got two more burn issues. Then we're gonna, you know, I think we are gonna cover issue 29 as kind of a handoff, and then we'll be done. Mm-hmm. We will be done with Alpha Flight.
29. That's funny. My series comes to an end with 28. Sorry, Professor Allen. I'm stealing your bit again. Okay, well, I want to thank the panel for your comments and your discussions. To absent friends, we wish you were here. We need your expertise and your comments. And to the listeners, if you have any different interpretations or you disagree with something that we say, by all means, get a hold of us. Contact us through Facebook on our Third Degree Burn page. You can send us an email, gottagetburned@gmail.com. What's the other one? Apple Tunes, iTunes, well, iTunes formerly can, Apple.
Yeah, iTunes. Well, it's Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes.
There you go. So you can get a hold of us, and we're always eager for feedback. There are a couple more Burn fan pages, if you will, on Facebook that have popped up. And we are sharing content between each other. I'm always amazed to find people who find examples of Byrne's artwork in other locations and share them. And, you know, I participate in that as well. I try to give the original page credit. I try to give Byrne credit, but by all means, share your discoveries. Most recently, there was something in Comic Interview or Comic Reader? At any rate, an old fanzine publication from the 1970s where Byrne had drawn a cover and was interviewed. And we shared that most recently on our Facebook page as well. So I want to thank the panel. Again, I'm going to go around alphabetically. Thank you, Tim Elliott.
Thank you.
Nigel Sphinx.
Thank you.
And Fred West.
Thanks, everybody.
And I'm Kirk Greenfield. I've been your host tonight. We'll see you in a couple of weeks for the final installment of our Alpha Flight coverage. Good night.
Now everybody's gone. Good day.
Good day. Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.